AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Stop surfing the dial. You found the greatest station ever. Locally grown radio 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Matt Piper in New York, where 35,000 NYPD officers are to be in uniform and ready tomorrow ahead of what's expected to be a very busy Lower Manhattan. It's where former President Trump will turn himself in following an indictment linked to a hush money payment made to former porn star Stormy Daniels. WCBS-TV's Jessica Moore is at the courthouse.
He will be fingerprinted and have a mugshot taken, but will not be handcuffed as he will be under the watch of Secret Service agents. Presiding Judge Juan Manuel Marchand has so far denied requests from media, including CBS News, to have a camera in court tomorrow. It is possible the judge could impose a gag order on Trump, preventing him from speaking about the case, including posting on social media, which he has been doing as recently as a few hours ago, writing, quote, witch hunt, as our once great country is going to hell.
New details about a deadly shooting 1 week ago at a Nashville grade school. Police have revealed that the shooter, a former student at the school, fired more than 150 rounds before being killed by police. Investigators say writings left behind by the shooter document months of planning prior to the attack that killed six people. Also today, thousands joined Nashville students for a rally at Tennessee's state capitol asking for an assault weapons ban. 33 people dead across eight states. That was the aftermath from a weekend full of tornadoes. But much of the South and Midwest needs to still be on the lookout for them. Meteorologist Jim Cantore with the Weather Channel.
Already a tornado watch across southern parts of Mississippi, including Mobile, Alabama as well. Tomorrow we jump into the heat of this thing in the afternoon, probably starting in Missouri, moving up into Iowa. We're talking about all hazards in play here. Hail, damaging winds, even tornadoes.
CBS's Jonathan Vigliotti says jury selection is underway in the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell, accused of killing her two youngest kids and her husband's ex-wife.
Suspicions started swirling around Daybell and her husband Chad, an author of religious doomsday novels, after her children seemingly disappeared in late 2019. Shortly after, Tammy Daybell died under mysterious circumstances. In June of 2020, the children's bodies were found buried on Chad Daybell's Idaho property.
Traffic deaths are on the rise nationwide, as correspondent Cammie McCormick reports.
The National Highway Safety Administration says there's been a more than 10% increase in traffic deaths. Nearly 43,000 people died in 2021. That's the highest number in 16 years. Most are due to speeding, impaired, or distracted driving. The number of pedestrians killed is also up 13%.
This is CBS News.
Streamline how you hire with Indeed. Their powerful hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
I always wanted to learn Spanish, but I never thought I'd have the time. Then I discovered Babbel.
Babbel's lessons are fun. They only take like 10 or 15 minutes, and in 3 weeks, presto, you're starting to speak another language, like magic.
I love that Babbel's lessons aren't just robots talking. They're voiced by native speakers, so you get the pronunciation just right.
If you want to learn a language, there's no faster, easier, better way than
Babbel.
Babbel.
Babbel. Go to Babbel.com to try for free. That's Babbel.com. Babbel.com.
I am James, senior apparel designer, and this is Behind the Design with Hawks. Hawks is your classic workwear brand. It's designed for those guys that are on the job site. Just driven performance, just rugged and comfortable. Thinking of durability, everything is either double, triple stitched, bar tacked. It's built durable. It's going to perform. It's going to move with you. It's going to have everything that you need in a product. Hawks, only at Boot Barn.
Lights, camera, action. It is time for your close-up with WFHR's Star of the Day featuring Culver's. Listen to WFHR every Friday morning at 8:30. We'll play a quote from a famous movie, name the actor, character, or movie, and you'll win two value baskets and two concrete mixers from the superstars at Culver's in Wisconsin Rapids. Join us Fridays to be WFHR's Star of the Day featuring Culver's.
Victor deployed for the first time to Afghanistan in 2003. At 4 in the morning, my phone rang. They said, I regret to inform you that your husband was wounded in action. Victor sustained a moderate traumatic brain injury. I was doing school full time, and I was also then caring for Victor. One of the most important elements of caregiving is taking care of yourself. I just didn't want to forget that I also had goals and that I also had a life. What I did is I challenged Victor to meet me halfway. There are almost 6 million military and veteran caregivers across the nation. We have our own journey, and we can fulfill that journey at the same time that we are helping our loved one.
Visit aarp.org/caregiving for a free military veteran's guide to navigate your caregiving journey and better care for your loved one and yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Lows level off around 32. Tonight, under overcast skies, winds out of the northeast, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected again. Tomorrow, scattered thunderstorms likely. High temperatures reach up to 42. Scattered thunderstorms likely. Tomorrow night, lows level off around 35. Cloudy skies expected. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 56.
From the home of the Cranberry Blossom Festival, your news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
Your Paul Revere Show. This is WAUK, 540 AM, 101 FM. We are here downtown Waukesha on a gloomy, drizzly night. April 3rd, tomorrow, April 4th, 2023, that election is going to tell us a lot about the future of Wisconsin, where we're going, where democracy stands, not only in Wisconsin, but around country. But before we get into maybe tomorrow, you know, I was reading end of the week, last week, Rainbow Land was outlawed in a school, a concert out here in Waukesha. And I said, wow, how can we not have rainbows in Waukesha? So in many ways, Waukesha is like ground zero for who we are as Wisconsinites. And I thought some background on Rainbow Land, it would be great to have a couple of parents and a teacher join us to talk about what is going on in Waukesha. And I'm delighted and honored to have with me tonight Reverend David Simmons, Sarah Harrison. Good evening, folks.
Good evening.
So let's start with you, Reverend. What's the personal story that you bring or you can share with all of us so we got some idea of what's going on in Waukesha?
Yeah, sure. So my family moved here about 15 years ago when I became the pastor of St. Matthias Episcopal Church here in Waukesha. And we were really excited to move from the south, from Kentucky up here, especially because, you know, I spent a lot of time like studying Wisconsin when we were looking at this and the kind of progressive idea of Wisconsin, of on Wisconsin, of forward Wisconsin, of, you know, across the political divide, whether people were Republicans or Democrats. One of the members of my church, Lee Sherman Dreyfuss, was the governor of Wisconsin at one point, signed the first legislation in the nation that outlawed workplace discrimination against LGBTQIA people in 1982, and he was a Republican governor. So, you know, this is the history of Wisconsin, is that progressive, forward Wisconsin ideal that was so really attractive to us when we moved here. Likewise, the school system performed really well and was a clearly an open and accepting place, especially compared to where we were in Western Kentucky at that point. So I think the change has been really noticeable for us. My daughter self-identifies as part of the LGBTQIA community, and we had a son already go through Waukesha West High School. So when we were Looking at the schools, we already knew that there were all these signs of acceptance in the schools. There were these pride flags. There were these open space or safe space signs that she would feel comfortable going to Waukesha West. And that changed almost literally overnight when the school board took a novel interpretation of an old policy and changed the way signage was taken care of. And
so what's the time frame for that?
Oh, gosh.
2 years ago?
Yeah, it was 2 years ago, and it happened literally within like a week. And it was part of the issue that we can talk about if we want to, is how weirdly it was implemented and how unclear the policy was from the very beginning and continues to be. That the unclearness certainly follows into the whole Rainbow Land issue here.
What happened in terms of 2 years ago? What happened in terms of how did that play out in your house, in your home?
So the school board created this sign policy that outlawed anything that was a, quote, a political issue that was controversial. And all of a sudden, the interpretation was being in the LGBTQIA community and showing any support for it was a controversial political issue. It went from being identity to being some sort of a controversial political issue. And the way that played out is I immediately became concerned, because the first step whenever a population is going to be persecuted is to take away the visible signs of support for that community. We see that again and again and again throughout history. So I immediately sent something to both the principal at West and the administration saying, you know, what you're going to see is an increase in discrimination against the LGBTQIA community, because you're removing a symbol of support. And when that happens, the people in that community, whether you're intending it or not, the people will feel less supported. And those who are bigoted against that community will feel that they've been emboldened to speak out. And unfortunately, that's exactly what's happened over the last 2 years. In my case,
wow.
Yeah. So in my case, my daughter, on October 1st, 2021, was with a group of kids in the Gay Straight Alliance who were sitting at a table in a cafeteria at Waukesha West. Another student in the GSA was handing out pride flags at that point. My daughter was sitting there. Somebody brought over this pride flag that they had written Trump 2024 and Blue Lives Matter on it and put it right in the middle of this group and started laughing. So it was obvious that they were being, it was a issue of LGBTQIA harassment. One of the kids in the group with her took a picture. So we have the picture for documentation. The other kid who dropped it and was part of a group that were standing around at that point picked it back up a little bit later and walked away. My daughter said that everybody was just kind of stunned at that point. They didn't know how to respond because they had never experienced that kind of overt harassment before. It was reported duly to the principal as it was supposed to be. I insisted that when the principal interviewed my daughter, that he have me present, because I do not trust that administration is going to classify things in the way that they do. He asked her directly how she classified the incident. She said it was a hate crime, was the way that she classified it, reporting it to the principal. I asked several times after, how discipline was handled, was told that was none of my business, that they couldn't say anything because it would violate student
confidentiality,
even though I wasn't asking for names. I was just asking how the incident was handled. And I also asked how would it be classified when it was reported to the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction, and was kind of told they wouldn't tell me that they hadn't classified it, et cetera. So I just waited until a few weeks ago when the DPI reports came out for 2021, 2022, and lo and behold, the official reporting of the school district of Waukesha to the Wisconsin DPI is that there were no reported incidents of same gender harassment in the entire school district for that school year.
So you know it wasn't reported.
Obviously, it was not reported. Even though, and the rubric for filling it out says you have to report them if they're verbally reported, if they're written reported, if they're alleged and withdrawn. It doesn't really matter. They have to be reported to the DPI. And the district did not report this. If my question is, gosh, if they didn't report this very clear incident, how many other incidents were not reported?
So, Sarah, your story.
Yeah, so I have two wonderful young humans. One is 16 now, one is 19 now. My 16-year-old is a sophomore at Waukesha South, and my 19-year-old is now a freshman at UW-Milwaukee. And in the last couple of years, they have been brave enough to come with me to multiple school board meetings and speak to the board about all the things that they're seeing and how it makes them feel to have this support withdrawn from their community. They both are non-binary, and they both are part of that LGBTQ plus community. And so first of all, I give them a lot of kudos, because I'm not sure when I was, I mean, my youngest was 14 when this first came around. I'm pretty sure when I was 14, I was not brave enough to go stand in front of a room full of adults in suits who look very intimidating and tell them why they're hurting me. That sounds real intimidating to me. The other side of what we're seeing is now that my oldest is off in college, they're seeing a lot of things that are almost like culture shock to them now, because they're seeing rainbows and they're seeing, you know, supportive messaging and supportive signage. And they're like, oh yeah, we used to have this, but it's truly like a culture shock to them now, because they got so used to that's an unusual thing that it still draws their eye even, you know, into their second semester.
So what were their stories that you can share?
Sure. Absolutely. So, they have had friends who were not comfortable being out necessarily at home, who were out at school. And now with this parental rights and transparency, so-called, which all the rights we already have, and I feel like it's not very transparent, but that's another issue, that resolution calls upon our staff to tell parents if students are identifying by, you know, a pronoun other than their assigned gender at birth. And so there's concern within the student population of, well, can I really be myself at school? Or does that mean that potentially that means I have to be ready to be out at home? And they, some of them are not ready for that. So these are kids who are already in a really difficult place in life. I mean, I wouldn't want to go back to being 15 or 16 years old for anything.
Yeah, I agree with you.
without that. And then you throw that on top, and it's an incredibly stressful situation for those kids who just want to be themselves.
Did the experience change when new policies were adopted? In other words, what was, you know, sort of the visceral changes? Yeah. What was going on in the schools?
Yeah.
Because we've heard a little bit about, right, Waukesha West.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And you said your kids are at?
So my youngest is at South, and my elder went to North. So we've got all three high schools covered. I would say more of what they witnessed were frequent microaggressions is what I'm going to call it, where it wasn't necessarily a big, bold statement like what David is talking about here, but things like a flag getting ripped down off someone's locker, that kind of thing.
Folks.
And my daughter reports that that's happening. The microaggressions are
happening. We will be right back to talk much more with Reverend David Simmons, Sarah Harrison, talking about Rainbow Land and its abolition here in Waukesha.
And now, a special message from Charlie Behrens of the Cripes Cast.
How in the heck are you? It's me, Charlie, here to remind you that on April 4th, there's a huge election going on in Wisconsin. It's for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Now, it's a divided court, so the winner of this election is going to help determine the future of Wisconsin. Be part of that decision. Go to myvote.wi.gov to figure out your polling location and also what ID to bring. Again, myvote.wi.gov. and watch for deer.
The key slides into the ignition. The engine rumbles to life. My hand grips the throttle. New gear for my ride. The road, my invitation. The sound, the smell, the exhilaration. I am one with the bike, and the car in front of me suddenly turns in my lane. Motorcycles are everywhere, but too often go unnoticed. Please, always look twice, be alert, and share the road with motorcycles at all times. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Transportation.
Hi, it's Jim Polzin from Badger Extra and the Wisconsin State Journal. Have you checked out BadgerExtra.com or the Badger Extra app powered by our top-notch Badger coverage team? Subscribe now to get extra coverage, including extra analysis, extra recruiting news, and one-on-one athlete interviews. Plus, subscribers get my exclusive podcast, Open Gym, where I answer your Badger questions. Go to BadgerExtra.com or search Badger Extra in your app store. Download and subscribe today.
Ladies and gentlemen, children at heart and of all ages.
Start your day laughing with Mornings on WFHR.
7 to 10, Monday through Friday, join your host James and the best co-hosts in radio.
Keep up to date on local news, sports, and weather.
Along with Misty's Menu, Birthday and Anniversary Club, and Friday's Culver's Star of the Day.
Join the conversation weekdays 7 to 10 for Mornings on WFHR. We're a serious comedy to start your day.
News talk and sports on both sides of the dial from Wisconsin Rapids and beyond. Locally grown radio 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk from Butler to Windlake. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
Welcome back. This is your Paul Revere Show. This is attorney Mark Thompson. This is WAUK 540 AM 101 FM. We are here and we're talking a very important issue, and just in terms of what is a safe school, what's a fair school, why, if we had laws passed as early as 1982 recognizing gay folks, their equal right, why are we sitting here at a time when we have an administration that is not allowing Rainbow Land to be played at a elementary school concert? And we were, just before the break, we were talking to Reverend David Simmons and Sarah Harrison. They were sharing their experience and their kids' experience. And Sarah, you were sort of talking about, you know, what happened to the kids?
I think that really a lot of it came down to, you know, like we were talking about the microaggressions. So it's small things. It might be someone getting shoved in a hallway, someone, you know, things that don't cause necessarily a life impacting, you know, thing to happen. But when you add it all up, it becomes a pretty heavy load for these LGBTQ plus kids to bear, and for no reason other than who they are. It's not the way that I have taught my kids to treat other people, and it's not good treatment. It's not good citizenship to treat your fellow students in that way.
So how do you see fellow parents responding to these issues? How has that been playing out for the last couple of years?
Sure.
Sarah, well, and then we'll go to the Reverend, and then we'll have a new guest join us and give us a teacher's perspective.
Absolutely. So we've had a lot of parents who have been opposed to these policies from day one and have come to many meetings and spoken out against them. Parents, teachers, students, community members. And there are those who also, on the other side, who think it's necessary, although I have not yet heard a well-articulated reason why. But there are definitely folks who, you know, to be fair, there are folks on the other side. But we have been vocal. We have been writing and speaking and calling and doing all the things you're supposed to do to impact change. And it's all really fallen on deaf ears over the last couple of years.
So, Reverend, when you got into this and you started looking at the policy and what changed, what did you learn? Because I know that you've published on this and you've, I'm assuming you've given sermons about it.
I generally, sermons have to do with you know, the way that we conceive that Jesus calls us to work on these particular ways. So I try to make a clear distinction between what I'm working on with public policy and what I'm doing as a preacher of the word, although that becomes difficult because quite often people who are opposing or are supporting the policies the school board are pushing are bringing up religious reasons at the school board meetings. So occasionally I remind them that Jesus said not to judge, and that he without sin cast the first stone, or let the little children come unto me, or any of the other things that Jesus actually said, rather than, you know, this kind of idea that other people seem to have that Jesus basically supports whatever they think.
Before I turn the mic over for a mini sermon,
because yeah.
I think
yeah, be careful there.
I think it's appropriate this week. I mean, you know, those folks that hold themselves out as Christians just had Palm Sunday, and this is a very special week, and it would be appropriate to have that sermon. But going back to the public mm-hmm. policy,
mm-hmm.
right? Now, yeah. And what did you see and what did you learn about that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Sarah has done more work on this than I have, of the idea that many of the policies that are being promulgated by the school board are not something that they're coming up with just out of nowhere. You can find similarities between the things that the school board and administration are putting out and several of the legislation that's coming out from different senators or in different places throughout the U.S. People it's not like this just showed up in Waukesha. It's something that's going on all over the U.S.
But what did you find out when this happened mm-hmm. to your family mm-hmm. and you went to the school board? What were you told in terms of what's the policy and why did the policy exist?
Well, I mean, the way they articulate the policy is it's because somehow these signs were disruptive to the learning environment. That's how it's couched, is that these signs were controversial, and the controversy is not part of the curriculum, supposedly, you know, which I can argue on that too, but that was causing a disruption in the learning environment. However, I've never actually heard anybody present a time where that was disruptive.
Right. In other words, because the rainbows were there.
Yeah,
and there weren't problems until someone said we want to outlaw them.
That's what I would say. And you know, we've had, as Sarah was talking about, we've had scores of kids from the three high schools come to school board meetings and talk about how harmful the policy has been to them. I have yet to hear a single child come and talk about the impact of how it was before the signage policy was put into place. I've heard several angry adults talk about how they were offended by it, but I haven't heard a single student articulate how that was causing a disruptive learning environment for them. So on one side, you've got scores of kids coming before the school board regularly saying how harmful this is. And on the other side, some adults with some vague ideas. And unfortunately, that doesn't seem, the fact that we're dealing with LGBTQIA youth who are four times as more likely to commit suicide as the general population. That's documented information from the Trevor Project. These are kids at risk.
This is your Paul Revere Show. We'll be right back on the other side to talk from an educator's point of view what has happened here.
Together we can start living in a rainbow.
Your place for this area's news, talk, and sports. We are Locally Grown Radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
My name is Juanita Segura, and I was diagnosed in November of 2014 with non-small cell lung cancer. The first time I heard about biomarker testing was actually My husband, he just started researching about lung cancer.
And I found out about biomarker testing, and I'm like, why not? Let's try it.
I'm Dr. Jorge Gomez, thoracic medical oncologist at the Mount Sinai Hospital. Comprehensive biomarker testing is looking for either substances in the blood or mutations in some of the genes of the cancer cells that can help us identify special types of lung cancer that can be treated with what we call targeted therapies.
Letting my children know brought all of us a sense of hope. To give them hope that mom is gonna be around to see you grow up. And I promised them that.
Ask your doctor about how comprehensive biomarker testing before treatment may help you and your doctor decide on the best treatment for you. Visit noonemissed.org for more.
A public service message from Longevity Foundation.
Victor deployed for the first time to Afghanistan in 2003. At 4 a.m, my phone rang. They said, I regret to inform you that your husband was wounded in action. Victor sustained a moderate traumatic brain injury. I was doing school full time, and I was also then caring for Victor. One of the most important elements of caregiving is taking care of yourself. I just didn't want to forget that I also had goals and that I also had a life. What I did is I challenged Victor to meet me halfway. There are almost 6 million military and veteran caregivers across the nation. We have our own journey, and we can fulfill that journey at the same time that we are helping our loved one.
Visit aarp.org/caregiving for a free military veteran's guide to navigate your caregiving journey and better care for your loved one and yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
My name is Juanita Segura, and I was diagnosed in November of 2014 with non-small cell lung cancer. The first time I heard about biomarker testing was actually my husband. He just started researching about lung cancer.
And I found out about biomarker testing, and I'm like, why not? Let's try it.
I'm Dr. Jorge Gomez, thoracic medical oncologist at the Mount Sinai Hospital. Comprehensive biomarker testing is looking for either substances in the blood or mutations in some of the genes of the cancer cells that can help us identify special types of lung cancer that can be treated with what we call targeted therapies.
Letting my children know brought all of us a sense of hope. To give them hope that mom is gonna be around to see you grow up. And I promised them that.
Ask your doctor about how comprehensive biomarker testing before treatment may help you and your doctor decide on the best treatment for you. Visit noonemissed.org for more.
A public service message from Longevity Foundation.
Chris Domine is a husband and a father. Chris is an athlete. Chris is even an Iron Man. But 10 years ago, Chris was facing a very different story because his kidneys were failing.
Basically, the doctor said, if you don't get a kidney transplant and if you don't do dialysis, you are going to die.
Fortunately, Chris received a second chance at life, made possible by an organ donor.
You know, your well-being changes from loss of hope to better times ahead.
More than 100 million people in America are registered organ, eye, and tissue donors. People of every age and ethnicity, because they believe it's the right thing to do. Imagine what you can make possible by leaving behind the gift of life. Learn more and sign up as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Go to organdonor.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.
Tired of low or no connectivity? Do you live in BTN, Bug Tussle Nowhere? We want to talk to you. Bug Tussle brings high-speed internet to the places others don't. No contracts, no data caps, truly unlimited internet. Call 877-227-0924.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Lows level off around 32. Tonight, under overcast skies, winds out of the northeast, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected again tomorrow. Scattered thunderstorms likely. High temperatures reach up to 42. Scattered thunderstorms likely tomorrow night. Lows level off around 35. Cloudy skies expected. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 56.
Towards equality, or are we going to buy into hate? And I've been joined, and it's a privilege to have Reverend David Simmons with me, Sarah Harrison, and I also have Monica Whaley. Hi, Monica.
Hello, Mark.
So you were a teacher, former teacher, that lived through this policy change. So from tell us what was it like from the teacher's vantage point, and what can you share?
Sure. So my wife and I came here 11 years ago to come into a community that was far more diverse than where we had been. We have a daughter who is Black, and she was the only student in that school district. And so we wanted her to have more representation when we moved into this area. And Waukesha at the time had a great reputation for being diverse, for being inclusive, and for really just a great educational system. So we were happy to come to this district. And my wife left Menominee Falls and came here as well to teach. And then we had a new superintendent. And the ironic thing about Jim Siebert is when he was hired, he touted that he was for open-mindedness and embracing diversity. And in the last couple of years, the board has kind of swung far to the right, and so it has changed this whole environment here in Waukesha, especially in our district education.
How did you see that as a teacher?
So when I came here, I felt included as a member of the LGBTQ community, and I saw the signage that was up. Everyone is welcome. This is a safe space. And so those teachers who wanted to be there and be supportive for students were able to do that. Those that didn't think that they were qualified to do that, they didn't have their signs out, and that was fine. And these were actually given to the districts throughout the state from DPI more than 10 years ago. And so a lot of districts had them up to be welcoming. And when Siebert got here, things just changed drastically. We had in the district, it was called a DELT team. It was District Equity Leadership Team. So we had an administrator on there, and then a lot of the teachers on there to be kind of a think tank as to how we can be more inclusive and the things that we can do with the curriculum and with the environment in the school district to make it a safer place. And one of the first things that Siebert did was to disband a lot of the policies. So it was really kind of a shadow team of, you know, any kind of policies being enforced. And then a month later, he actually got rid of the equity leader. She had made a move from one school as a principal to take that position. And then within a month, she was out of a job. They found another job for her in the district, but the reason she left was to be that. And she's a person of color. And so racially, I think that this is it's not a healthy environment either. So it draws into question just how inclusive and diverse is this district.
So as a teacher, are you still a teacher now?
I retired in June early because just of the environment of not being welcoming and having hateful people. Parents who had called us heroes, you know, during the pandemic are suddenly now calling us villains and groomers because we're trying to take these kids who had been in this once-in-a-lifetime situation at home and not at school and not with their friends and, you know, bring them back in a healthy environment. And suddenly social emotional learning is a hot topic, and we can't teach that to the kids. But these kids haven't had any of that for 2 years while they were out from the pandemic. And so it just got to be really hostile.
What do you think the attitude is amongst teachers and parents that you worked with? And how does this play out?
I think a lot of the teachers are really frustrated, and they are so burned out. I don't think a lot of people understand what teachers went through during the pandemic. We had to teach online, and we had to teach in person. And, I mean, it was double the workload. And then to come back and have this kind of environment was, it just burned you out. And not feeling like the administration and the Board of Education has your back when you're in the classroom, who would want to be in this situation? Last year, we saw more teachers leave than ever in this district because of that. We've had administration leave, especially people of color, BIPOC people, and LGBTQ teachers and administrators leave because of that.
Is there a sense that there is concern in the community about this?
There's a big concern about turnover.
So and how do you see that play out?
Sure. So not only within the school districts, but as far as the economic viability of Waukesha, how are we going to draw in more businesses, more families, if we have this kind of an environment? I think we have been the laughingstock of the nation for a couple reasons. One was the food issue when the district was the only district in the state of Wisconsin that didn't take federal funding for meals for the kids. And the school board voted against that. And after huge outrage by parents, the board changed their mind on that. But again, we're going to be fighting that same battle this year.
So the putting the mic back to you, Reverend. Have you heard theological reasons or arguments in support of the change of the policy? And is it consistent with, I think you said, Jesus's teaching? Or how does that play out? In other words, what's your, this is sermon moment.
Okay. So, I mean, yes, you will find in parts of the Christian community a belief that the being LGBTQIA is completely incompatible with Scripture. I mean, you will hear people say that. The truth is there's not really much Scripture that even talks about this issue. Jesus is much more concerned about money and how people deal with their money than he is actually about human sexuality. But we tend to kind of gloss over that. But, you know, you talked about this being Holy Week, and, you know, one of the things that I think about on Holy Week is the question of, you know, if you're a believer, what did Jesus die for? There's a 13th century English mystic, Julian of Norwich, who has a vision, who sees this really horrific vision of Jesus dying on the cross, and then all of a sudden he comes to her whole and says, "Are you satisfied with what I've done for you?" So whereas a lot of people seem to have some sort of strange idea that Jesus had to die to assuage God's honor or to take care of the debt between humanity and God, you know, what Julian said is, it's not that, it's the wrath is in humanity, and Jesus came to take that wrath, our own wrath, away from it. So with that wrath, you know, I think that's what you see playing out so often, is people are working out of their own wrath here. And if you're a Christian, Jesus died back then to take that wrath away from us. So when we continue to indulge in that hate, when we continue to indulge in not letting people just be who they're created by God to be, we kind of blaspheme against the crucifixion of our Lord. So to me, it's really frustrating to hear people use Christianity and the Scripture as a way, as a stick to beat up LGBTQIA people or people of color or any other thing, because it's very clear to me that Jesus died for all of humanity.
Is there a sense that the broader community, Waukesha, is engaging in that kind of theological discussion about what does our policy, what should it look like?
I don't think there's a theological discussion so much. I mean, you'll find, you know, most people who are outside the church probably think that the majority of Christians believe that Jesus was anti-LGBTQIA. That's not true. I mean, if you look among most, especially the mainline Protestants in Waukesha, you're going to find that most of us are openly affirming.
So how are mainline Protestants then addressing these policy issues?
Well, it's mostly in our own communities of just trying to make sure that we're as affirming as we can be. For a lot of us, I mean, there are a lot of us who are involved. For instance, I'm on the board of the new PFLAG group here.
So tell us, what is PFLAG?
PFLAG is it's a very old group. It's been around for decades, that basically is about education and support for parents, originally for parents. I've just been handed a PFLAG
of
the first U.S. organization.
I was going to have Monica weigh in on it, too.
Families and allies of LGBTQ individuals. They provide support and resources to this group and community members. So it's really designed to help, especially with parents who are struggling with their child who is coming out or going through transition. How do we help them in that case and understand what's going on with their children?
So, Monica, you pass that off. Do you participate in PFLAG too?
Yes, I'm also on the board.
So how is PFLAG as a board, how are they involved in the community on this issue?
Well, it's a brand new charter, and it was brought about by parents who have children who identify as LGBTQ, and they wanted to have resources because, you know, of the struggle within the district of not being supportive, but also just how do we prepare ourselves for what our children are going to go through? How do we make environments more accommodating and friendlier for them? I went to the first meeting just to find out more about it, but also to see what kind of resources I can help them out with, too. Because as a teacher, as a special ed teacher, that's kind of what I do. I know resources, and I know where to go and where to send people. So, you know, that was kind of my role. But I also want to say that, you know, as far as when in teaching and with the PFLAG, too, is it's college and career. These kids are going to be coming out of college, and they're going to go to places like other universities and community jobs, and they're going to have a diverse environment there. How are we preparing them to handle those kind of diversities when we're just kind of whitewashing everything that happens in the district?
So when you heard about the concert and Rainbowland not being allowed, what was your response? What was PFLAG's response?
I can't speak for PFLAG, but for myself as a teacher and somebody who identifies with the LGBTQ group, I was outraged, and even more outraged because I know the teacher that was involved in this, and she's compassionate. She's a huge advocate. She's written books on you know, how to understand gender. And so to hear her get just lambasted with all of this in the community, it's very hurtful, knowing that it was with the best intentions. And really, rainbows? That's really the hill you're going to die on.
Well, that's why we're sort of talking about it, you know, the day before a major election, because it seemed to me it's, if nothing else, it's a First Amendment issue. And, it strikes me as just remarkable that, you know, it's being tolerated. I don't, you know, has anybody filed a lawsuit yet, or?
Not that I'm aware of, but we're rounding up the horses.
So, you know, here's it, just before we go to the break. You said this teacher has been involved, written books. What has she done?
She's just been a tremendous advocate as a teacher, but also as somebody who is a straight woman who just has a passion for understanding and making the environment safe for all children.
For everybody.
Everybody.
Everybody. What is her name?
Melissa
Temple.
I wanted to give a shout out. So.
Yes. Yeah.
You're right. She's made national press. So.
She has.
This is.
Data shows that after a child turns 9 in foster care, they are much less likely to be adopted. But the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption believes every child is adoptable.
Families, if you're able to let your hair down a little bit, there's a lot to learn from teenagers.
The clock is ticking for teens at risk of aging out of foster care. Learn how you can help at DaveThomasFoundation.org.
No one ever made a highlight from the sidelines. Get in the game, join the conversation with WFHR's Playmakers. Call in Monday mornings from 10:06 to 11 with your sports thoughts. And Tuesday through Friday, listen in while we talk with some of the most insightful, intriguing people in Morning Magazine. Talk radio that speaks to you. Get in the game, join the conversation at 10:06 Mondays with Playmakers. And Tuesday through Friday, Morning Magazine on WFHR, locally grown radio.
Right arm, right leg.
Left leg, left arm.
Both legs above the knee.
Both legs, part of my left hand.
Lost both my legs in Iraq.
These 9/11 veterans are just a few of the heroes we serve at Homes for Our Troops. For nearly 2,000 severely injured veterans, everyday life has become filled with barriers. So we build specially adapted homes with features like wheelchair access, roll-in showers, and pull-down cabinets that allow them to function independently and focus on their recovery and family. This life-changing gift of freedom is provided mortgage-free to these veterans, thanks to our donors and supporters. But we need you to join us, too, in completing this important mission. Please visit HFOTUSA.org and help build homes and rebuild lives.
You're tuned into your home for the Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
Currently, it's 43 degrees.
A progressive voice for rural Wisconsin. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com.
Welcome back. This is your Paul Revere Show. We are talking about the issue of how is it possible that Rainbow Land is a song that can't be performed by elementary kids in Waukesha. We talked a little bit about the history of it, you know, that is just like remarkable. But Sarah Harrison, we've talked about your kids. So where did these policies come from and how is, you know, tell us about WISRED and how it's gotten involved.
Yeah. So WISRED is part of the Waukesha County Republican Party, and they have put a lot of money into our last couple of Waukesha school board races. And we have seen that their candidates have taken over our board. And now that we have a very politically aligned board, we're seeing these things come across, and we know this issue is not something that came from organic parental concern. I mean, you could deduce that just based on content commonalities between the SDW parental rights and transparency resolution, excuse me, with legislation introduced by folks like Josh Hawley, Tom Cotton, and our state level Republican Wisconsin legislators as well. But we don't really have to play detective because they're kind of saying the quiet part out loud an awful lot lately. Last year, we saw 100 books challenged in our district. 18 of those books weren't even in our libraries. So this is not a kid bringing home a book and a parent saying, oh, I'm concerned about this content. This list had to come from somewhere, and it didn't come from our schools. And a lot of those books had LGBTQ content or had race relations content. Those were the two strong trends that we saw across there. And the other thing that confirms it is if you want to look at the opening sentence of the SDW resolution and compare it to a template that you can download from the Moms for Liberty website, which is a conservative organization with strong ties to such high-ranking Republicans as Ron DeSantis, Rick Scott, Betsy DeVos, and also some national anti-LGBTQ groups, including the Heritage Foundation. If you look at the first sentence of each of those two documents, there are only two words that are different, and they do not make a material difference in the meaning. So I don't think you have to be a detective to know that is not a coincidence. They are definitely being, they are molding in these political views into our public school policies, and it's not okay.
Well, I mean, you mentioned WISRED. This is a new phenomenon. It is not like the traditional, I would say, right, traditional George Bush Republican,
sure.
Right? I mean, or, you know, this is not, certainly not an Eisenhower Republican view. Frankly, yeah. It's probably not even a Ronald Reagan view, but how does that policy get played out, and how has what? And then let's talk particularly how has the administration responded to, you know, Rainbow Land?
Well, they first sent out a press release, just kind of saying, "Well, fortunately, we could still do the Rainbow Connection, so everything's okay," and that was basically about all they said. And then this past week on Thursday, there was a communication that went out to all parents that was really flabbergasting to me. As a person who has studied communications as well as a parent, because they were just taking no responsibility for any of the decisions. They actually stated in their document that the school board and the administration did not make this decision, but we definitely stand behind it. And it was very talking out of both sides of their mouth and throwing the staff and the teachers under the bus. And in fact, there was even like a, well, this really should have been dealt with on, you know, inside the schools under policy XYZ. And my feeling is this really shouldn't have ever come up because they shouldn't have created a toxic environment where teachers are afraid to say the word rainbow without the superintendent's permission. So that's how I would see it.
So, Reverend Simmons, during the break, you had mentioned rainbows and Kentucky.
Oh, yeah.
So... Well, what is that story and how does that, you know, out here in 2023 in Waukesha?
Yeah, you know, I remember I grew up in South Central Kentucky in the 80s, and my mother was an elementary music teacher. And so we would learn all sorts of songs, and I cannot tell you, I mean, I could probably come up with four songs off the top of my head that were all about rainbows that we sang regularly. So the idea that the environment has become so toxic, it's gotten to the point, because of the way the policy has been implemented, that a local administrator at a school believes that they have to go to the school superintendent to talk about a song about rainbows because they're afraid of what will happen, not just because something might happen, but because there's been actual disciplinary action taken against teachers for continuing to display rainbow stuff. So this is the ridiculousness of the situation, is that a first grade teacher has to go to their principal, who has to go to the superintendent of the entire school district in order to ask if they can sing a song about rainbows. And then there's a whole bunch of rigmarole where they substitute one rainbow song for another, even though their lyrics have no real difference. I mean, and they still won't articulate. I mean, the school district still, we've asked them repeatedly from multiple people, what is the objectionable content in Rainbow Land? And they will not answer that question.
Right. Folks, how is Rainbow Land dangerous to your children? Think long and hard. And if you come up with an answer, please, please, please call the school. So, Sarah, I know that you're out there politically. Reverend Simmons has limitations on what he can say about... just. Sure. On the partisan issue.
I cannot endorse candidates.
Right.
No, I can.
But I mean, it's a very important, I mean, it's part of our separation of church and state.
Exactly.
I mean, it's so, but we do have a huge election tomorrow, Sarah, right? We have
a
Supreme Court race and we have a school board race here in Waukesha that impacts these First Amendment issues. So
yes.
What can you say on that issue?
So, at the Supreme Court level, Janet Protasiewicz is our hope for a future where Wisconsin can continue to go forward, as Dr. Simmons was saying earlier, as Father Simmons was saying earlier. And here in Washington,
he wasn't endorsing a candidate.
No, he was not endorsing a candidate. Oh, I'm sorry.
We got 30 seconds. I don't want to miss it.
Diane Voigt is your candidate in Waukesha. And if you're in Elmbrook, Preetha and David Irwin are your candidates for reasonable school board members.
Folks, this is your Paul Revere Show. This is April 3rd, 2023. April 4th, 2023 is probably the biggest state Supreme Court election in the history of Wisconsin. If you care about your children, if you care about your future, get out and vote. And vote early because they're saying the weather may be.
My friend Teddy almost set his house on fire. He used a counterfeit, you know, a fake wall charger. He had to go to the hospital.
My big sister Jenna's face turned bright red. She was just showing people online how to use a new cream. She still has the scars.
My brother's friend Billy had to jump off his motor scooter when it caught fire. he fell and got hit by a car. He broke his leg, blew his chances to play basketball in college.
My BFF Chloe was riding her bike and hit a ditch. Her helmet broke in two. Now, she has a brain injury.
There is a cost to buying cheap. Do you want to pay the price?
Real products are tested for safety. Protect yourself. Don't fall for fake products.
Visit ncpc.org/goforreal. Brought to you by the National Crime Prevention Council and the United States Patent and Trademark Office.
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.